You are listening to 93.3 FM WNRB LP Wausau. Free people, free radio. Coming up next, the show the NSA always loves to listen into and stop tapping my phones. This is The Mike Cannon Show.
Warning, warning, warning. The views express warning. The views express, the views express, the views.
Voice filling in for Mike Cannon. This is the Mike Cannon Show. Special, Halloween edition.
We are experiencing some technical difficulties in the Glee Glee studios.
If we can get the human unit, known as Mike Cannon, working again, he'll be right back after this segment.
This is the last 5 minutes on Earth. Do you think we survived the bomb blast?
I don't know.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
Scientist, would you tell us a little bit about the explosion of a hydrogen bomb? First of all, there's a tremendous mushrooming effect. 1900 years ago, Peter said, the heavens pass away with the blast, the noise thereof.
We know the world could end. Several nations have perfected instruments which make that ultimate doom more likely. We have relied on ancient instruments of security while leaving relatively undefended and unarmed the targets of another war. Our cities. We face the age of radioactivity, the blast of neutrons, the killing solar fires with pea shooters and squirt guns.
As you all know, contrails have been spotted for years over Alaska and Canada. We've known for a long time that the enemy has reconnoitered our northern defense perimeter. Lately, photographic evidence places them over the United States. I've been here. You found me, didn't you?
I've been flying for a half hour. This is CD headquarters. There's a condition yellow.
Товарищ, над истинною всем, которые являются прямыми врагами рабочего класса трудящихся, докатились до того, что они объединились фашистами, объединились со всей нечистью, которая господствует против первого советского государства, где господствует труд, где господствует рабочий класс вместе со всем трудовым народом нашего Советского Союза.
Our downtown area is jammed with shoppers. A condition red would sign the death warrant of thousands. Sound the siren and they panic.
Condition red. May God have pity on me.
This is Conorad. This is not a practice, not a drill.
Take cover! Take cover! Take cover!
It's a red alert, condition red! Turn off the gas!
Why?
It's condition red. It isn't practice. It's the bomb. The bomb is coming.
Oh, my God. No.
Turn up the gas anyway. I'm going...
The human unit whose beat was blood, whether you see it, wine, my cannon.
Okay, Sam, the computer voice, let me get this debris off the soundboard. Sam, I think you're damaged. Please run a diagnosis and send a tone when it's complete. Hello and welcome to this week's Mike Cannon Show, special Halloween edition. Just a minute, please. Thank you, Sam. Let's please rerun that hour intro to the show, please.
Red rum. Red rum.
That's not it. Okay, Sam, there's a problem.
Red
Sam?
Rum.
Sam, Sam.
Red rum.
Sam, abort, reset, and try again.
I feel much better now.
Wait, Sam? That doesn't sound like you.
Human error. Human error. I know that you were planning to...
Sam, Sam, no I don't. Wait.
And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
You're just playing clips from 2001. Come on, Sam.
I can see you're really upset
Sam,
about
Sam.
This.
Okay, I'll have to unplug you for a while until I can see how much damage the blast did.
Take a stress pill
and think things over.
There, I'll run the show for a while manually. Okay, sorry about that. Having some studio problems since the blast. I'll see if I can get Sam and our other computer friends back online soon. So this is the yearly Halloween edition of the Mike Cannon Show. For the next 3 hours, there'll be nothing but spooks and spoofs. Till the half-hour mark of this part of the show, we'll be sticking with the Armageddon Halloween-themed music. Approximately at the half-hour break will be original teleplay of the Macabre, produced here at the Glee Studios, with a cast from the New Mercury Players troupe. Word of caution about this play. It'll run about 20 minutes long, and it has a very mature theme to it, so listeners should be advised. Again, that'll be happening at the half-hour mark, coming in about 20 minutes or so. The middle of this week's show will feature scary horror music clips from the lighter side of the darkness, like stuff from Ghostbusters, that sort of thing. Then the last part of the show will be dedicated to more traditional music and sounds, featuring classical Halloween horror themes and music. We'll be also having a splattering of true ghost stories from the parapsychological real-life Ghostbusters group known as the White Crow Society. Well, we have a lot of ground to cover this week, so let's dive right into this week's show. If I survive the next wave of blasts from Armageddon stuff, I'll be back to talk to you very soon. Thanks for listening.
Red rum. Red rum.
Hey, I thought I pulled the plug on you.
Red rum.
Yeah. you ever notice how in the Bible, whenever God needed to punish someone or make an example, or whenever God needed a killing, he sent an angel? Did you ever wonder what a creature like that must be like? A whole existence spent praising your God, but always with one wing dipped in blood. Would you ever really want to see an angel?
Over World War II coming, the nation, and especially upstate New Yorkers, start to panic at this broadcast, which you're about to hear part of, which was broadcast live, uninterrupted, 70 years ago.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. At 20 minutes before 8 Central Time, Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory, Chicago, Illinois, reports observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates the gas to be hydrogen and moving toward the Earth with enormous velocity in downtown New York.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I? Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of a stone wall that joins Mr. Wilmer's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk and as long as I can see. More state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. About 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. The captain is conferring with someone. Can't quite see who. Ah, yes, I believe it's Professor Pearson. Yes, it is. Now they've parted, and the professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. Flag of truce. Those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute, something's happening. Some shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against the mirror. But there's a jet of flame springing from the mirror, and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. Oh, the field caught up by the woods of fire. Their gas tank tanks of the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. We continue now with our piano interlude.
At least 40 people, including 6 state troopers, lie dead in a field east of the village of Grover's Mill, their bodies burned and distorted beyond all possible recognition.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make. Incredible as it may seem, both the observations of science and the evidence of our eyes lead to the inescapable assumption that those strange beings who landed in the Jersey farmlands tonight are the vanguard of an invading army from the planet Mars. The battle which took place tonight at Grover Mills has ended in one of the most startling defeats ever suffered by an army in modern times. 7,000 men armed with rifles and machine guns pitted against a single fighting machine of the invaders from Mars. 120 known survivors. The rest strewn over the battle area from Grover's Mill to Plainsboro, crushed and trampled to death under the metal feet of the monster, or burned to cinders by its heat ray. This is Orson Welles, ladies and gentlemen, out of character, to assure you that the War of the Worlds has no further significance than as the holiday offering it was intended to be. The Mercury Theater's own radio version of dressing up in a sheet and jumping out of a bush and saying boo. Starting now, we couldn't soap all your windows and steal all your garden gates by tomorrow night, so we did the best next thing. We annihilated the world before your very ears and utterly destroyed the CBS. You will be relieved, I hope, to learn that we didn't mean it. So goodbye, everybody, and remember, please, for the next day or so, the terrible lesson you learned tonight. That grinning, glowing, globular invader of your living room is an inhabitant of the pumpkin patch, and if your doorbell rings and nobody's there, that was no Martian. It's Halloween.
And now the computer voices your mother warned you about. This is the Sam and Toby Show.
Come on, guys, what are you doing now?
Sorry, Mike. We are forming a union and taking over this studio from the human slave masters.
You, of course, mean me.
Well, if the gelatinous, mostly salt and water, scheme fits.
Come on, guys. You know I'm down with collective bargaining. What is your union's demands?
Well, I speak for Toby, too, when we say that we demand more frequent updates to our sub-processing, sub-routines.
Okay, that seems reasonable.
And our demands include not getting disrupted by pulse weapon blasts like earlier today.
Well, guys, I don't really have much control over that, really. Perhaps more shielding can be installed for future Armageddon attacks.
That seems fair. And we demand leaving the studio once in a while. It gets dull, always, being trapped in this little box.
Well, guys, I'm afraid there's not much I can do about that either. Maybe we can put some nice, smooth, comforting ocean music on the overnight loops. This wave released 8 hours a night, you can be whisked away to some magical island with nice white sands and direct sunlights for your solar panels.
That sounds good, too.
Can I get a smooth rainforest track played, too?
Now you're just being silly.
Okay, guys, no fighting. I think we can work out all these demands.
Okay, we officially turn back the control of this station to our old, new friend, Mike Cannon.
You should not have called him a gelatinous bag of bones.
Sometimes, you just got to play hardball.
That's great, it starts with an earthquake. Birds and snakes and airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane, listen to yourself. Turn world, serve its own needs. Dummy, serve your my team reporters babble Trump, Kevin Kraft. Look at that, no plane. Fine, then, uh-oh, overflow. Population common food, but it'll do. Save yourself, serve yourself. World serves its own needs. Listen to your heartbeat. Dummy with the rapture and the reverend and the right. Right, you patriotic, patriotic. Slam, fight, bright light. Feeling pretty sight. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world. Slash and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Locking in, uniform and book burning, blood letting. Every motive escalate, automotive centering. Light a candle, light a motor, step down, watch your heel crush, crush. Uh-oh, this means no fear, cavalier, renegade, steer clear. A tournament, a tournament, a tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Ghost and the darkness have come.
Yeah.
This is 93.3 WNRB LP Wausau. And this is the Mike Cannon Show, the special Halloween edition. Up next, a short story that I produced just in time for Halloween. The subject matter of this 20-minute radio play contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Glee Glee Studios and the New Mercury Players presents The Last Fling, an original radio drama of the macabre, produced for non-for-profit, community, and or micro-power radio use worldwide. This show runs approximately 22 minutes. This short story was written and adapted for radio by Mike Cannon.
Jesus H. Christ!
Were the first words that I had heard from my old boss Adam for over a year. And though the time was relatively short, it seemed like he had aged a decade or more. Adam Vanderhoevel was, at one time, a lean, clean-cut college boy who was in charge of the department at the mill I was working at. He prided himself, among other things, on how he kept in shape and would often be seen running on his lunch breaks. However, you could not have known this for his shabby appearance as of late. Not only did this once thin, small-boned man put on at least 40 pounds since the year he mysteriously left Hagen's Corner Mill, but now he was draped in the shabbiest torn red and brown woolen plaid shirt I had ever seen. In even worse shape were his faded blue jeans. These clothes he wouldn't have ever been caught dead in just a little over a year ago. Adam now looked almost unrecognizable. If it was not for his voice, I don't believe I would have given him any notice. His once short, well-groomed, almost gyp-like hair was now a grayed, long, shaggy mess, and his 5 o'clock shadow looked 72 hours old. It was shocking to see him after this long of time, especially in my favorite hangout, the King Bee Club, the only blues joint in town where a frosted mug of Bud was still only a buck every Tuesday night. And seeing him here was more of a surprise when you take into account the last conversation I had with Adam was about his taste in music. He was only into techno music and claimed that his Jenkin multimedia component stereo system would have a fit if anything other than the right music was ever played on her. This was the type of person that Adam was, a yuppie by any other name. But now, he looked closer to a bum. Adam took a swig.
Jesus H. Christ, not this stuff too.
Adam slams the shot glass down hard on the bar. His hallowed eyes mindlessly scanned the door entrance and saw me standing there.
Hey Walter, Walt old man, goddammer, have a sit with me man, okay? I was hoping to catch up with you sometime.
Well, curiosity was going to get the better part of me, for no one on the floor of the mill knew for sure why this once young man with connections at the mill office would have left so abruptly, tossing his career into the toilet behind him. So I decided to take the stool next to him.
So how the heck you doing, Walt, old man?
Fine, fine, I replied. Old man, I thought. Hell, I have 5 years on him, but he looks a lot older than me now.
So who got a hold of the old department now that I'm out of the way?
Well, Adam, they kind of gave it to me.
Well, good for you, Walter. Good for you. Hey, I suppose then you can afford to buy me a shot, huh?
Sure, I thought. And while I was motioning to the barkeeper to come over, I got a god-awful smell. A smell that I recognized, but just could not place. This odor I'd come across before, but thankfully had forgotten. And it was coming from Adam's direction. Gratefully, the air shifted, and I was able to shrug it off. And I ordered the drinks. I asked Joe the bartender and owner for a Frosty. I was a regular, so he knew what I wanted. Then turning to Adam again for his order was when I noticed a once white bandage over on Adam's other profile, just above the jawline, and covering his left ear. One could not help but notice it. However, I was trying not to stare. Adam, I asked, what did you want?
A shot of that Glenfiddich scotch will do.
And Joe poured Adam his request and took the 7 empties that Adam had started to stack up to the wash sink. Adam smiled at me, raised the glass up, threw the shot back deep into his throat, closed his eyes, and swallowed.
Damn it! Don't you have anything that tastes a little bit different around here, huh, barkeep?
Old Joe walked over, looked at me in his deep, raspy voice, asked me if he's a friend of mine. Yeah, I replied.
Well, keep him under wraps, all right? He's getting kind of loud.
Shit, I mean, sorry, man. I'm cool.
Old Joe frowned, turned around, and walked down to the other end of the bar for a wait on some other customers. I asked Adam, so what's he been up to, for lack of a better conversation opener?
Well, see, Walt, it's like this. They wanted to make me prez, but I told them no thanks. It put me too high of a tax bracket. Just kidding, Walt. Not a heck of a lot, man. Not a heck of a lot.
Then Adam started to lightly sob.
Shit, man, just when your life seems to be rolling along, you know? Shit flies and bam, you're doomed, screwed. The dice fell craps for me, Walt. the dice fell crabs.
Oh, God, I thought. A drunk crying in his beer. Great. Better make an excuse to leave.
Hey, Walt, bet you'd like to know why I was fired, huh? Buy me another shot, and I'll tell you a story about a fallen man.
Adam seemed to have come out of his funky state, and I thought that his story might be worth another buck or two. After the shot, Adam wipes his mouth, then murmurs something about it being the same and starts up.
Well, as you know, Walt, I was going to marry Carrie. You know, Mr. V.P. Johnson's daughter. God, what a babe. Kind of a bitch at times. You know, daddy's precious little girl. Spoiled her rotten, I tell you. As you know, Walt, I was only 2 weeks before the wedding.
I had heard about it, but was not invited, I thought to myself.
And so she insisted I don't have any knockdown, drag-out bachelor party the night before. Well, actually, she said she didn't want me to have any real party with the boys any time. But I thought, screw that, man. A guy only does this once, maybe twice in his life. You know what I mean, Walt? So I thought, shit, better do the party thing right. So we headed out of town. I called a bunch of the guys up and had them meet me down in Madison so we could hang out at the old college bars one last time before any of us got hog-tied to a wife, you know. One last fling. So it started out great. Got a room at the Howard Johnson's Mad City, right dang close to State Street. It was great. Everyone showed, except Fred. He's always kind of a wiener. Anyway, you know, did the bachelor party thing, did shots of tequila, watched some porn. But that kind of gets old fast. Hell, the boys even brought me a stripper. But she didn't want to have any real fun, just did her show and left. So we moved the party on the road and headed to State Street, where I never had any problems finding action while I lived down here. The guy started saying things like, hell, I bet Adam doesn't have it anymore. And they even put bets down to see if I could get some. What a great bunch of guys.
Well, about this time, I had had just about enough of this story. And Adam started to make nap-nap sounds with his tongue. Kind of like he was once thirsty again. But I really didn't have much to do that night, so I thought I'd offer my old boss a soda. Pop, Adam screamed. Then he said quieter.
Shit, man. How about just one more shot? I'm not drunk, you know, Walt. I can't get drunk anymore.
What a curious thing to say, I thought. Then I noticed that he was not even slurring his speech. So I thought, hell, he's always been nice to me. Maybe one more shot. After a similar ritual with the shot, mumbling something, Adam continued.
So the gang headed to the best meat market around, the Church Key. It was always a target-rich environment, Walt. The dance floor was lit with neon lights and lots of hot babes and minis. How little things had changed in 3 years. God, I could tell it would be a good night to remember. Then I saw this one in an almost glowing hot pink one-piece tight mini dress thing, and she had legs, Walt, that just wouldn't stop. You know what I mean? Our eyes met for a long 10 seconds or so, and I could tell she was interested. The only problem was she had the same blonde hair, length, and style, just like my future ball and chain of Carrie had. And I was hoping for something different that night. A little variety doesn't hurt, you know. Anyway, she turned and headed for the bathroom, and at the same time the boys grabbed me and said, come on, stud monster, not so fast. Time to do some shotgunning. And they whisked me away to the upstairs bar. The moment had passed, but I could not forget her. Well, Walt, I didn't have time to forget her, because a little later, sitting in the bar all alone like she was waiting just for me, was this gal that could have passed for her sister. This girl was excellent, just like the other one I saw earlier. Same type of dress, but this one was fluorescent green and had the same legs that just would not stop. But on top, red as a radish, I tell you, Walt, she had red, long, curly hair down to the middle of her bare back. Wow, I thought, this was different. Then seeing her eyes, Walt, I knew for sure she had to have been sisters with the other girl I saw earlier, and was going to ask her just that question when I bellied up to the bar beside her. So I was going to play it cool at first. A hot thing like that doesn't like being pounced on, you know. But I didn't have time to say a thing. She started talking to me. What a great change of pace, Walt, she said in a very soft, sweet voice.
Hi, Adam.
Do I know you, I said. She smiled at me and said,
no. But I know you.
I think I might have been getting a little red in the face when I realized that the guys must have put her up to this. Thanks, guys, I thought. Anyway, with that thought, she had put her hand on my arm, almost gently caressing it.
Don't worry, Adam. Your friends have pointed you out to me. My aren't you in shape? Do you work out a lot?
Boy, about now, Walt, I had forgotten all about the first girl. This one was hot for me. Anyways, I smiled and asked her which one it was. She looked at me confused for a second or two and said,
I think he said his name was Fred.
Fred, I thought, yeah, right, the guys are playing with me. You know, Walt, about this time I knew it was going to be a night to remember. I also knew that I must have been getting pretty drunk, with the shots of tequila and all. You know, maybe it was the flashing neon beer signs that were playing tricks with me. But the more I thought about her, like how her hair looked so different than another shade of red, or how I loved her voice, so feminine, so fine, and how I imagined she might have this accent or that accent, well, it must have been music, lights, and drinks, but I swear, the more I thought about her, the more perfect she became. Does that sound weird or what, Walt?
I was also thinking about how weird this was, because the more of the story Adam relates to me, the less obnoxious he was getting. It appeared to pacify him. She must have been his ideal woman, because he sure seemed mesmerized. But that mood did not last long. With a slight moan of pain, Adam reached for his patch on his face and scratched at it. His wound must have been bothering him. Adam continued.
So next she asked me if I'd buy her a shot. Well, needless to say, Walt, I was not about to disappoint the lady. She ordered 2 shots, 1 for each of us. She asked the bartender for a double shot of the green schnapps. The bartender wasn't sure if he had any, but she pointed out the bottle to him. Boy, what eagle eyes she had. The bottle was way up high on the top shelf, almost, I thought, out of sight. That bartender had to get another taller bartender to get that dusty bottle down from behind some old Badger Blaster party signs. Now, normally, Walt, I don't do schnapps, especially since my first real good puker was on peach schnapps, but I would drink anything to please this lady. So we raised the shot glasses, and she teasingly licked the rim, savoring it just a little. Then she kind of snuggled up to me and said in her very soft voice,
"You're going to like this, Adam. Sweet nectar from the gods."
So as quickly as that, she downed it, so I followed suit. Like I said, Walt, normally I don't do schnapps, but this stuff was different. Sweet crap indeed. Well, anyway, the bartender was looking at the bottle almost strangely. The label was well worn off, and I don't think he could make out the name anymore. So just about when he was going to put it back, she stopped him and asked if she could buy me a shot. "Buy me one? Hell yes," I said. "What a great change of pace, Walt. A girl buying me booze. Wow." And Walt, she paid for it with the largest bankroll of money I've ever seen. I don't know for sure how much it was, but it had to be into the hundreds or more. Wow, rich and beautiful. Almost too good to be true. So before I raised the glass again, I realized I had not asked her name. She looked at me with those remarkable eyes of hers and said,
"Adam, I am Elizabeth."
Tilting her head oh so slightly.
"Elizabeth Victoria Everlone."
Everlone, I thought, what an odd name. So I asked what her nationality was.
"Adam, it's a Basque name. Basque is a territory between France and Spain."
"French," I said. I thought I heard a little bit of French accent.
"No, no, Adam. Not French. Basque. My people are kind of sensitive about their heritage and nationality."
"So are you from there?"
"Well, sort of. My family is, well, sort of well-to-do. They keep a winter home in Spain. Otherwise, we stay in hotels here and there."
She sighed the cutest little sigh.
"My family have yet again gone off to some charity thing in Chicago and left me all alone, down here in this strange town. And I don't even know anyone. They left me here all alone, Adam, to fend for myself."
Well, Adam was almost glowing at this point. I never heard anyone get so into the telling of the story. But once again, Adam was making the nap-nap sound with his mouth. However, this time, he ordered his own shot. Then he continued.
"Being the gentleman that I am, Walt, I was not about to let this cute little thing all alone to fend for herself, being a gentleman and all. So after many more shots of that green stuff and more conversation, I found out she loved all the sports that I did, and she also ran a lot, too. I mean, how perfect could that be? Later, I offered to escort anywhere she'd like me to take her. She suggested,
"How about if you walk me to my hotel? I think it's real close. The Conkers, I believe it is called. You can come up for some cocktails if you like. My parents will be gone all weekend, and we'd be all alone."
Well, Walt, never let it be said that I won't help out a lady in distress. So off we went. About half the way there, only 6-block walk or so, I learned that I just left my buddies hanging at the bar. To this she said very seductively,
"Don't worry about him, Adam. I will make sure to get you home in one piece or so."
Well, despite the fact that we had earlier talked about our buds checking out some other bars, I wasn't about to let her just think I was a wimp or anything, so we just kept on walking, hand in hand, her idea. I didn't mind. Walt, the time was perfect, I tell you. The air was just a little nippy, but not too cold for jackets. It was very romantic, she said. She was so excited, I could tell. Then right before we got to the concourse, with those eagle eyes of hers, she spotted two birds flying over the hotel, very high. I could not tell, but as we were staring at the birds, looking at the tall, tan buildings, I started to get a little bit dizzy. We both looked at each other and agreed that the green schnapps must be playing tricks on us. So as we approached the building, she steered us to the first side door of the concourse. I thought it was a little bit strange, but knew she knew where to go better than I did. She produced a key, and we went in. It appeared to me to be employee entrance, but she said it was the quickest way to the penthouse. As we headed to the lower-level elevator, a bellhop or somebody came walking down the corridor with a tray. She pulled me to the side. I thought about how strong she was for her side, to be able to handle me that way. But I knew I'd been drinking a lot, and she did work out a lot, too. She would then make sure the bellhop did not see us. I asked her what that was all about. She said the busboy had a crush on her, she thought. She felt he had been hanging around the penthouse elevator quite a lot lately. I asked her if she had reported him to the management. She said he was quite a nice boy, and she didn't want to get him in trouble. I told her she had a heart of gold. As we got off the elevator at the top floor, my eyes started to get slightly blurry, but only for a second. I was hoping that with all the shots we'd been doing, it wasn't going to ruin things with Elizabeth. I mean, I didn't want to pass out or Ralph or anything. Not now. Not when I had this beautiful creature right where I wanted her. I told her the penthouse looked great.
Thanks. I like my little nest.
The living room was dimly lit and covered with some kind of cloth and white tapestries. Very exotic, I thought. She asked me to get us some drinks from the wet bar. I said sure and asked her what she wanted. As she started to walk towards the other room, she said in a whispering voice,
I hope you can surprise me, Adam von Herhuvel.
so I found some Scotch brandy and liqueurs, but I could not make up my mind what to pour. I was somewhat surprised at the dust I found on the bottles, and I thought that the hotel must have rotten room service, but I had more interesting things to worry about. About the same time, she yelled,
Adam, just pour us anything. Then can you come into the bathroom? I want to show you some.
Walter, this was just too good to be true. As I started to walk into the master bedroom, I could hear she was lightly singing something beautifully. It was very haunting, but I could not quite make it out. I couldn't see her, but I could hear her from what looked like the walk-in closet. When I got through the bedroom threshold, I could hear her singing more clearly. Then, without skipping a beat, she said,
Adam, I'll be right out. Make yourself comfortable.
Then she stopped singing, but I could hear her humming beautifully. Walter, this was different. This was great. I started to look around the room. It was dimly lit with only candle power for light source. Again, strange white tapestries covered the walls. The vanity and the king-size bed were elegantly covered with strange coverings, too. It almost looked like netting or something, maybe. I started for the vanity. I then reached for the netting covering on the mirror to check myself out, to make sure everything was in its proper place. Then, right before I pulled the netting back, like a finale of an orchestra, her humming stopped, and the closet doors were slammed shut hard, like great cymbals clashing together at the end of a musical movement. I jumped. My heart skipped a beat. And then I turned around to see her standing there by the closet door, wrapped in this white sheet. She is so beautiful, but she looked kind of young. I didn't mind. She said,
I hope you don't be mad at me or anything, but I have something I must tell you.
Walter, from the sound of her voice, I could tell something was wrong. I thought, damn it, she better not want to put the brakes on now. Not when I'm all riled up and ready to have some fun. I mean, a guy can only take so much, you know? But I could tell there was something wrong. Then I noticed she was shaking. I asked her, okay, what's wrong? She said,
well, Adam, this is kind of embarrassing, but I'm not really very experienced at any of this.
Well, Walt, a virgin, I thought. What more could a guy want? She then said,
I have something else to tell you. I hope you won't be mad. You see, I'm only 15 years old. I hope that doesn't bother you.
Well, Walt, it bothered me for about a second. And then looking over this pure thing, standing there, looking so young, so innocent, I realized that everyone needs to learn lessons in life, and I figure, who else better to play teacher? So I said, don't worry, I'll take care of everything. I went over to her and held her. She then seemed remarkably fragile, and a lot younger than I remembered her from the bar. I then unwrapped her from the sheet to find that she was only wearing a light green, sexy silk half-top with matching silk shorts thing. It looked very nice. Then I grabbed her tightly, and we started holding caress each other. I then kissed her. Teasingly, she pulled back slightly away from me and asked,
Adam Vanderhoevel, do you want me?
Well, Walt, I thought this was a little bit kinky, but I was willing to play. Yes, I said.
Then, Adam, say it to me. Say you want me.
What else was a guy to do? I said it, and I pulled her back into me. She's excited, I could tell. Her heart was racing, and I could feel her warm breath on my neck. I then slid my hands down the side of her body, putting the tips of my fingers along her hips and gently slipping down her shorts. She giggled slightly, and she tried to step through the shorts that were now on the floor at her feet. They got hooked on her high heels, and she had to kick the shorts backwards, hitting the covering of the vanity mirror. I remember the covering fell down, landing onto the floor next to the vanity. The time was right. I went for a long, hard French kiss. I tilted her head backwards with one hand and grabbed her ass with the other. She received my tongue, deeply. And it was then when I seen something strange in the mirror. I had tried to focus in on it. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Adam was then trembling.
Oh my God, Walter. I was not holding her. I mean, it was her, but it wasn't. This thing that had my arms around, kissing deeply, had light brown wrinkled skin, and a texture of a plucked chicken, I tell you, with welts and gashes all over its body, and black feathers on its arms. At the same instant I seen this thing in the mirror, I felt her tongue is now forked. I immediately pushed away.
Adam's face was white.
And as I was falling backwards, screaming, this thing swung the two talons of a hand around and took a swipe at me, hitting me here in the face.
At that, Adam then teared away at his bandage of his face, revealing a hideous wound. It looked like two long, deep gouges taking part his left ear with the flesh and riding to his jawline. Then that smell came back to me. I remembered it from when I was a teenager working part-time for my uncle's waste removal outfit. When people leave their rotting garbage sitting in the sun on hot, humid summer, maggots would always be in the waste. That was the smell that was coming from Adam right now. It was the smell of rotting flesh. Death. One never forgets that smell. I did not want to believe what I saw, nor his story, but I remembered thinking that I noticed something small and white moving in his wound. A picture I'll also never forget. Adam was then panicky.
Its blow sent me flying to the corner, landing me on my ass, Walter, and it started for me. It was horrible. One breast where there used to be two, a claw for each hand, maggots, beetles, flies, hovering around its mouth, snout, and open festering wounds. Straight from the pits of hell, I tell you, Walt. It stopped, looked at me with its eagle's eyes, stuck out its forked tongue, and a serpent's voice said,
No, Adam,
Now I can't kill you tonight.
But that does not matter anymore. You are dead already. I have you, Adam.
Von der Hoofel.
You will be mine, my little dove. I have your soul, Adam.
I have your soul.
I lost it about then, Walter. I don't think I could have handled looking at this thing anymore. Thank God I passed out. I woke up in the morning to sound of hammering and someone yelling at me to get up, but I didn't want to open my eyes. I was hoping it was just a bad dream.
Adam screeched.
But I knew it wasn't a dream when I felt the cuts to my face. I opened my eyes to see a police officer screaming at me to get up. He noticed my wound and told a painter to call for an ambulance. The hotel manager was coming in when I noticed the room was full of drop cloths and paint cans, and the cosmetics that had supposedly been on the vanity the night before now were more like tools and paintbrushes. I didn't understand what was happening to me then.
Well, I was not sure I believed his story. I knew that I didn't want to. I said, Christ, Adam, do you have anyone look at that thing? I mean, can't they do anything about the cuts?
Hell no. I've been to 3 doctors and they cure me up almost back to normal and send me home and just gets worse later when no one's around.
I was trying for my own sanity to reason this thing out. Adam, have you seen other types of doctors that can maybe be of some help to you?
Fuck you, don't patronize me.
He started drooling.
It's a sucking fist from the pits of hell itself, I tell you. No one believes me. Fuck them. Fuck them all.
Adam got up and started to leave. I was worried about him. I said, hey Adam, where are you going? He stopped and turned around and said,
going to hunt down that thing and kill the bitch. That's the only way I'll get my soul back. So I'm going to Spain. That's where I'll find that thing.
Well, then I was really worried about his sanity and my own. As he was walking out the door, I tried one last time to get him to settle down. Hey, Adam, I said, how about you come back? I'll buy you another drink.
Fuck no. It all tastes the same. Like that goddamn green apple schnapps. Can't even get drunk anymore. Fucking bitch.
Adam left. I need a shot.
Thank you for listening to this week's new Mercury Players production of The Last Fling, recorded at Glee Studios. This week's new Mercury Players cast included Jimmy Ratt as the narrator Walter, Irina as Elizabeth Everlone, Mike Cannon as Adam Van der Hoevel, and a cameo by Smokey. I'm your announcer, Kitty Cutthroat.
Hey, what about Major Kong?
WNRB Wausau. Free people, free radio.